Chapter 7. It was almost completely dark as we made our way to the house of James of the Glens. At 10:30, we came to the top of a hill, and I saw lights below us, coming from a house where the door was open. We could see the shadows of 5 or 6 people. They were running about in a hurried fashion, each carrying a torch. James can be a fool sometimes. If we were soldiers, then he would be in trouble. But then he must have a sentry on the road to warn them of something. No soldiers would be able to come the way that we have done, Alan said, as we looked down at the house. Then he whistled 3 times. At the first whistle, the people with the torches all stopped moving. At the 3rd whistle, they started moving again. After he whistled, we started walking down the hill towards the house, and James Stewart himself met us at the gate. "James, this is the young man I told you about, Laird of the Lowlands, but it would be best if no one knew his name here," Alan said, as he introduced me to the brother of Ardshiel. James greeted me and then turned to his kinsman and said, "This has been a terrible accident. It will only bring us trouble." James wrung his hands together as he spoke. "You have to take the good with the bad, man. Colin Campbell is dead. Be thankful for that," Alan told him firmly. The 2 men talked about what was going to happen and the trouble that was coming with the blame for the death of the Red Fox. I looked around me as they argued. The servants were all busy working. Some were on ladders digging their hands into the thatch of the roof, bringing out guns, swords, and some other weapons of war. I could hear digging not far away. I knew that they were taking the weapons to bury them, where they wouldn't be discovered. They were moving about in panic, as it would not be long before the redcoats came. A girl came out of the house carrying a bundle. "What has she got there?" Alan asked. "Your French clothes. We're burying them with the guns in the moss," James told him. "Bury them? I'll wear them," Alan tutted, and went to the barn to change while James took me into the house and sat me at the table. He was clearly worried about what was going to happen, and his wife was crying by the fire. He tried to be a good host, but the worry was distracting him. "I am sorry I am such bad company. I can't think of anything but the death of Colin Campbell and the trouble it's bringing to the innocent," James sighed as he paced about. His son was burning papers and burned the wrong one. This small mistake caused James to scream at his son. It was something that was painful for a stranger like myself to see and hear. I was very glad when Alan came in wearing his fine French clothes. One of the other Stuart sons took me to change my clothes, which I had not done since I was kidnapped. When I went back to James and Alan, Alan had told James all that had happened, and that we were going to the Lowlands. They were both busy getting everything ready for us to leave. They gave us each a sword and pistol, some ammunition, powder, a bag of oatmeal, an iron pan, and a bottle of French brandy. With all of this, we were ready to head to the heather. Money was lacking, though. I only had 2 guineas. Alan had only 16 pence, and James could only give us a handful of coppers. But we had to go. The longer we stayed, the more risk there was to James. "It would be a painful thing for our friends if I was to hang," James said sadly. "It would be an ill day for Appin," Alan agreed. They were both upset and felt foolish for wishing for the death of Colin Campbell for so long. "You'll need more money to run from this until we can find who is responsible for it," James sighed and added. "I'll have to offer a reward for your head. It's a terrible thing to do to you, but it must be done to save Appin." James pleaded with Alan as he took hold of his kinsman by the coat. "I know. And for my friend from the Lowlands too," Alan agreed. "I hate this business. It's making me a traitor, but a jury of Campbells," James cried. I told James that I would not abandon Alan, and then it was time for both of us to leave the house of James of the Glens. We said our goodbyes and went off into the night. We climbed over the same broken country as before. Sometimes we walked, other times we ran. In the day, we ran more and walked less, and their country seemed to have less and less people in it. Yet there were quiet houses in the hills that Alan would tell me to hide from while he went to the house to talk to those inside. This is how they passed news of what had happened. It was a duty that had to be done even when one was fleeing for his life. We crossed a river and a waterfall as we hurried to find some shelter from the day. I began to stumble as we ran, but we kept moving until Alan stopped under a giant rock, which was none too soon for me. Alan waited a minute before he climbed the rock and helped me to climb up after him. When I reached the top, I saw why he had climbed up the rocks. There was a hidden hollow in the top of it that was big enough for four men to hide in. We climbed in hurriedly and lay down, not saying a word. From the hidden hollow we could see around the whole landscape and see if anyone was approaching where we had hidden. "Now we have a chance," Alan sighed as we lay there. He told me to sleep and that he would take the first watch. I soon fell asleep and was woken by Alan's hand on my mouth. I had been snoring, and there were redcoats close by. I looked over the edge of the hidden hollow and saw the soldiers were not too far off. There was a sentry standing on rock as high as ours, and a camp below where a big fire burned. Other sentries were posted down the river and higher up the glen. "This is what I was afraid of," Alan said as we lay there. We didn't have any water, only the brandy that James had given us. We had to stay where we were until the redcoats left, but if they climbed the hill and looked across, they would see where we were hiding. When it got close to night, we climbed down on the opposite side of the rocks to the soldiers. They had already searched this side of the valley and were going the opposite way to us. After we were sure that they were going the other way, we set off slowly. We made sure that we kept out of sight as we moved. Our process was slow, but the sun was going down and the night would hide us. We came to the river, where there were no sentries, and both lay down to drink as much as we could. We put oatmeal into the pan and cold water to make a meal for us to eat. We couldn't build a fire with the redcoats so close. When it was dark, we got up and walked quickly. We kept our eyes open for fires and torches that would tell us that redcoats were close. That night we made a good distance and were both happy that we had tricked our enemies when they came so close to finding us. We found a cave to hide in and made heather beds to sleep in, and now had cover to build a fire. We made hot porridge and caught trout in the river that we cooked over the fire. We stayed there for a few days, and Alan taught me to use my sword. Alan felt that we were safe where we were for the moment, and that it was time to send a message to James to send money to us. He cut a piece of wood into a cross and took the silver button he had given me. He cut a piece of cloth from his coat and used it to bind the cross, strung the button onto it, and put a sprig of fir and birch into the binding. Then he told me that there was a hamlet nearby. He told me that the cross was a symbol in his clan to rise if it was put in a window. But one of his kinsmen, John Breck, would see it and then know that he was in need of help and where he was. That night, Alan went to the hamlet and put the cross in the window of John Breck. He had not been seen in the town, but it had been close. At noon the next day, John Breck came to the woods. Alan wrote a letter to James using a quill he had made. He made ink from gunpowder and wrote on a piece of the French commission he carried in his pocket. "Dear kinsman, please send the money by the bearer to the place he knows of. Your affectionate cousin, A.S. Alan wrote and gave the letter to John to carry. John promised to go as quickly as he could, and he left. He came back after 4 days and told us the redcoats were scattered across the country looking for us. James and some of their relatives were all imprisoned at Fort William. They were all suspected of having a hand in the death of Colin Campbell. Everything was as bad as it could be, but Mrs. Stewart had sent a message to Alan, telling him not to be caught, as both he and James would be dead men if they were. She had sent all the money she could get for us and prayed that we would be safe in the lowlands. Mrs. Stewart had given John Breck one of the reward posters so that we could see it. The reward for us was set at £100. We read how they described us on the poster. It said that Alan was a small, pockmarked, active man of 35, dressed in French clothes and a feathered hat. It said his French cloak was blue with silver buttons, his waistcoat was red, and his breeches were black. It said that I was a tall, strong lad of about 18, wearing an old blue coat, very ragged, an old Highland hat, a homespun waistcoat, blue breeches with country shoes. It said that I was a lowlander and that I had no beard. Alan was pleased that his clothes were so well remembered, and I thought that I was a miserable and poor figure. Yet now I was wearing different clothes. The description was wrong, and I was much safer than Alan was. "You should change your clothes," I told Alan. "You may be right, but I have no other clothes with me," Alan said. Though I had promised not to abandon Alan, I would be safe as no one would know I was the wanted man from the description on the poster. If I was arrested alone, there would be nothing to say that I was the lowlander that the poster spoke of. But if I was arrested with Alan, I wouldn't be able to deny it. I didn't say anything aloud, as I didn't want to upset Alan or John. But as Alan brought out the purse of 4 guineas that Mrs. Stewart had sent, I thought about leaving more and more. It was more money than I had, but it was enough to get Alan to France, as long as I was with him. Not only was Alan a burden on my life, but a burden on my purse as well. But this wasn't the way that an honest companion should think. I knew that Alan had saved my life more than a few times during the course of our friendship. There was nothing else to do but keep these thoughts quiet and take my chance in the company of the man. "It's a small purse, but it will do for us. Now, John Breck, my buttons, please," Alan said, and held out his hand for it. John looked in his own purse for it, but after a while of searching, he couldn't find it. "What? You have lost the button that belonged to my father? Now I will tell you what I am thinking, John Breck. I think that this is the worst day's work you have ever done since the day you were born," Alan said, as he put his hands on his knees and looked at John with a smile on his face. It was enough that John Breck was miraculously able to find a silver button in a flash and handed it over to Alan. "Thank you. It's a good thing for the honour of the McCalls," Alan said, and turned to me. "Here is my button back again. Thank you for lending this symbol of our friendship to help in our cause." I put the button back in my pocket as John and Alan said goodbye to each other. "You have done well by me and risked your life in helping me. I will always give you the name of a good man," Alan said to him. After this, John went on his way back to the hamlet. After he had gone, Alan and I broke our camp, destroyed all signs that we had been there, and we were ready to flee southwards again.